In every human relationship, there are some basic principles that enable that relationship to work. And if those fundamental principles are not observed, that relationship, in fact, will not work. That's the problem with many marriages today. We don't know what the fundamental basic principles are that cause that marriage to work. And not every relationship is founded on the same foundation, or not every relationship starts at the same place. For example, a marriage begins at a different place and on different principles than your relationship with a brother or sister in Christ. Now, I wish I had time to investigate that further, but obviously one relationship, a marriage relationship, starts out based on one thing. The relationship that you have with a brother and sister does not start out on that same foundation. Not the same purpose. Not the same emotions. Not the same feelings. And yet, there are principles that make every one of these relationships work. And regardless of the relationship, the most critical area, the area for failure or success that determines whether or not that relationship will succeed or fail, is the area in which we think or act differently. Our differences and how we handle those differences determines whether or not a relationship, including a marriage, or the relationship on your job, or the relationship in the church with your brothers and sisters. That's why I love Romans chapter 14 so much. It tells us how to handle differences in the church. And folks, in case you haven't thought about it in a while, we've got a good thing going on here with this congregation. There is harmony. There's peace. Nobody's trying to kill one another. There's not any major problems. There's always a few relationship problems within the church, but we have a really good thing going on here. And we want to make sure that that continues, and that's altogether up to you and me. And the first key is to learn that the solution to the differences that exist between me and you is not that you have to learn to think exactly like me, or that you have to agree with me on everything. If that is the basis on which we have a successful relationship, then there are not going to be any successful relationships in life. Because we do think and act differently in certain areas. In God's family, it soon becomes apparent that we don't all make the same identical decisions. We don't all think the same way on things. And how you feel about that difference is incredibly important. And how you act because of the differences between you and brothers and sisters is incredibly important. How you treat your brother who's made a different decision than you have is really important. How many of you brought your Bibles? Hold them up. Turn to Romans 14 in case you haven't already. When I first came here, I told you that there was one section of Scripture that I planned to preach a sermon on each year. And so this is your yearly installment today. Because I believe that it contains the principles that are required to maintain harmony in a congregation. And without observing these principles, I believe that there will be incredible difficulties in congregations, and I've been in some congregations where there were, and maybe you have also. And it's because these principles, or some of these principles, were ignored. And let's learn in Romans chapter 14, there are so many lessons. One reason I like it so much is every time I read it, I realize there's a different way to approach it, and very practical ways to approach it. But I want to examine this morning why we need to learn to get along with each other. And to just throw it out in front of everybody on the table, I believe that the first principle that works into our having unity is we must all have a deep desire to have unity. If you don't have that desire, if your focus is on something other than having unity, remember Jesus said, by this all men will know you're my disciples if what? You have love for one another, right? And so if we don't make that a primary focus in our life, and you have to work on this because I promise you it doesn't come naturally. Because there are some weird folks in the Lord's church, aren't there? And we might be thinking of someone, you might be thinking of someone different than I am. You know what I'm saying? This chapter tells us how to get along with one another. But it also tells us why. And I want to focus on the why. The why is really not as complex or as difficult to comprehend, certainly, or to carry out as the how. But nonetheless, it is every bit as important because when you understand the why, you will take the difficult steps to accomplish the how. And if you don't understand the why it's so important, then you won't go to the trouble. You won't make the sacrifice that's necessary in order to maintain the unity. True righteousness is from the inside out. And so the why has to be there. I want to look at the chapter as a whole, just kind of broad this morning. In verse 1, starts it out. It provides both the problem and the solution. Verse 1. Accept him whose faith is weak without passing judgment on disputable matters. And the word, the Greek word for disputable matters, is it's a combination of words, dia, which means through, logismos, which means logic. We get the word logic from. So it means to reason through. And so the matters that are under consideration here are matters that require you reasoning through them. Or another way to say it is, paraphrase is, warmly receive him whose faith is weak without condemning his opinions. Without condemning his opinions. Therein lies the heart, the potential for separation, for failure, or for success, depending on how we handle each other, how we think about each other whenever we're in disagreement on things. And this is the sum total of the entire section right here. Warmly receive him, the word accept means. Warmly receive him whose faith is weak. In verse 2, he's going to tell you who has weak faith and who has strong faith. Without passing judgment on disputable matters. And this really gets into our heart and into the way that we think and the way that we reason. Hold your finger right there and turn over to the end of this section, Romans chapter 15, verse 7. And see how similar these two statements are. Accept one another, then. Same phrase as in 14:1, warmly receive one another. Just as Christ accepted you in order to bring praise to God. So you have a beginning and an end. The beginning says, accept him whose faith is weak without passing judgment on disputable matters. And then he's going to tell you why you should do that and how you accomplish that. And he's going to come down to chapter 15, verse 7 as a summary and say, accept then, warmly receive one another. Same phrase. Just as Christ accepted you. And that's important that you understand that phrase. Because that's the way that Christ accepts you. The way that he's asking you to accept a brother with whom you differ on matters of logic or reasoning or opinions, that's the same basis that God accepts you. He doesn't accept you because you've got everything lined up, because you've got all your ducks lined up, because you think of everything perfectly and you have a perfect understanding and your opinions all align with his. That's not why he accepts you. He accepts you even though you have some understanding on matters that are not accurate. And yet he accepts you. And in view of that, it would certainly behoove us to be that same way toward others. And so, verse 1 provides both the problem and the solution. In order to fulfill this charge, two things have to be addressed. Why should it matter that much to me, and how do I go about accomplishing this? And the how doesn't really matter until you get the why. Because you won't be serious about applying it until you understand the why. And so we're going to take our time and look at the why this morning. And here's a general outline of this section in view of why should I care about you? Why should I accept you? Why should I go to all the trouble that it's going to cause me in my mind, in my heart, in my reasoning to accept you when we don't see eye to eye on things? The first two outlines, two breakdowns of this outline. Verse 2 through 12 addresses your attitude toward your brother and what he believes. Your attitude toward him in view of the fact that he believes differently than you do, or maybe he's acting differently than you do in some matter. That's verse 2 through 12. And then verse 13 through 23 addresses your attitude toward your own actions and how they affect your brother. And we really have some attitude problems here, because we tend to have an attitude that says, what I do is my business and it's none of your business. And God's going to address that, not just in this context, but in other contexts in our New Testament. And so looking at our first breakdown, verse 2 through 12 addresses your attitude toward your brother to enable you to specifically identify what attitude it is that you must overcome. He gives you a valuable insight into the tendency of how the weak feel about the strong and how the strong feel about the weak. But first of all, we have to define and allow him to tell us, when he uses the term weak and when he uses the term strong, whom is he talking to? Are you weak or are you strong? And I'll tell you, one of the things that I find, since I've done this so many times, I find almost humorous, is the fact that those of us who've always considered ourselves to be strong, and by the way, most of us do, regardless of which side we come down on, but those who traditionally think of ourselves as being strong, we're going to get a shock in this context. Because the ones that we normally in the church consider to be the strong ones, they're in this context, you're the weak ones. And the ones that we would consider normally to be the weak ones in this context are the strong ones. Look at verse 2. One man's faith allows him to eat everything, but another man, literally being weak, eats only, literally, greens. So you have one person who can eat meat, they can eat vegetables, they can eat anything. You have another person who eats only vegetables. Only, literally, he says here, greens. And so he says this man's faith allows him to eat everything, but another man, being weak, eats only greens. And he who eats everything must not look down on him who does not. There's the tendency that someone whose conscience will allow them to eat everything, they look at someone whose conscience will only allow them, or specifically in what we're looking at here, their conscience will not allow them to eat meat. And he said, when you see such a person and you can eat anything, your conscience allows you to eat anything, then what's your attitude about somebody who says, no, you can't eat meat? He says, he looks down on, that's King James, New International. Literally, he makes out to be nothing or nobody. Now, you tell me if that's not the way that you feel towards somebody who your conscience allows you to do whatever. And there's this brother whose conscience says, no, it's wrong for you to do this. When he says that, or when you know that's his attitude, what is your natural tendency toward him? Your natural tendency is to say, I don't care what he thinks. Who does he think he is anyway to tell me? He's nobody. And that's our natural tendency. If we are the one whose conscience will allow ourselves to eat anything, and you apply that not just to food, he's going to apply it also to days that people consider as special. And it could be any number of things. I think that the number of things that could be plugged in here is actually limitless. Because we all have certain things that our conscience will allow us to do that other people's conscience won't, and vice versa, won't allow them to do. And so the first thing is we have to address our attitude toward our brother. And our position on any given matter, am I for it or am I against it, I guess that's a pretty practical way of saying where we are, determines our natural attitude toward our brother. And he says it twice in verse 3, and then if you skip down to verse 10, he says it again. You then, why do you judge your brother, or why do you look down on your brother? Why do you make him out to be nothing or nobody? And so if my conscience allows me to approve of something that someone else disapproves of, then I tend to make them out to be nobody. And if my conscience forbids my participation, I also have a natural tendency. And my natural tendency is to condemn that brother because he's doing something that I consider to be wrong. And so we both have natural tendencies, regardless of which side you fall down on. And this context is written, and he starts out again in chapter 14, verse 1, you accept that brother without passing judgment on these matters of opinion. That's the problem, and that's the solution to it. And we have to keep coming back to that because there are some things that some of us feel really, really strongly about, and somebody else sees those things differently, and we tend to just totally dismiss that person. Or we tend to go behind their back and talk about them all the time and condemn them and criticize them to other people. And so, verse 13 through 23 is your attitude toward what you are doing or what you're not doing. Receive, verse 1, receive him to yourself without condemning him. My willingness, and this is, I think, another fundamental statement undergirding all of this, my willingness to do what this passage is going to tell me to do depends entirely on the value that I place on you and that you place on me. If I don't care for you, or if for some reason I dismiss you, and I don't care if you're here or if you're not here, then none of this is going to work. It entirely depends on how much value I place on you, whether or not I'm willing to do the difficult things that are necessary in order for us to have harmony and unity. Why should I not go with my gut feeling about you? Why should I be concerned about accepting all of my brothers and sisters, even those with whom I have some pretty serious disagreements? Well, he's going to give us five reasons quickly that motivate us to put every effort into getting along with our brothers and sisters. Reason number one is in verse 3, and you can look at that. It says, because God has accepted him. And so are you better than God? Are you going to pass judgment on somebody that God accepts? And interestingly, God has done this for everyone, as we noted earlier, including you. Your standing with God is not because you're on the same plane with God. It's not because you understand everything perfectly like God does. And so God has accepted you with your imperfections and with your misunderstanding. And so whenever you really get your back up and you really are going to press this issue to the division of the Lord's body and you discount some brother and you act like they don't matter, are you condemn, constantly go around criticizing and condemning another brother, then how must God feel about you, since that's the same principle on which he's accepted you? You want him to treat you like you treat your brothers and your sisters? The word accepted is the same word as in verse 1. God accepted him. He has received him to himself. And so, whenever we decide that we're going to make an issue out of this and we're going to go with our gut feeling and we're going to say, what you think doesn't matter, or you're going to hell if you do that. And whenever that's our reaction, then we set ourselves up above God's standard. And so the first reason is, why should I accept him? Because God has accepted him. And if that were the only reason, that'd be enough, would it not? And then secondly, in verse 4, the first part, in verse 10 through 13, because you are not the judge. Now, I know that comes as a shock to some of us, but everybody does not have to answer to you. You know any people that seem to have the attitude that everybody has to answer to me? I know a few folks that way. And I think they really do believe that. If they don't, they need to change their attitude and change the way they talk about other people, because they're constantly criticized and finding fault with other people. And the reason that we do that is because they don't measure up to our standards, because they don't agree with me. Everybody doesn't have to agree with you. You may not have all the right answers in spite of how convinced you are. And so verse 13 says, stop passing judgment on one another. It doesn't mean that you have to approve of everything that everyone else does. It just means keep your mouth shut, in plain language. You don't have to let everything come out of your mouth that enters into your mind. In fact, he's going to say near the end of this, do you have convictions on a certain matter? Then keep it between yourself and God. And so, in just plain language, you need, and I need, to learn to keep our mouth shut whenever we think something about somebody that falls into this category of either discounting them and making them out to be nothing, or condemning them in these matters. Listen to how we treat a brother who's involved in sin. Galatians chapter 6, verse 1 through 3. Brothers, if a man is trapped in some sin, you who are spiritual should restore him gently. That is a word. Restore him gently is one Greek word. And it's the same word that is used of how you set a broken bone. And you do it as gently and tenderly as you possibly can. And he continues, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Now listen to this last part that he tacks onto this verse. If anyone thinks he's something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. Now, why do you think he would tack that on the end of that verse? If a man is trapped in some sin, you who are spiritual should restore him gently, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. And then he adds on the end of that verse, if anyone thinks he's something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. What do you think he's talking about? Well, a person who thinks he's something, if somebody has to measure up to my standards, I'm not going to carry your burdens. I'm not going to be patient with what I perceive as your weaknesses. You're going to either do it my way or it's the highway. And so, we're setting ourselves up as the judge. And then reason number 3, and I had 5, I told you, but we'll finish up the rest of them tonight. But reason number 3 is in the second part of verse 4, because God causes that brother to stand. And that this really brings out to me a word picture. To his own master, he says, he stands or falls. And he will stand. You got that in that phrase? And he will stand, for the Lord is able to make him stand. This brother that you're criticizing, this brother that you're condemning, or this brother that you're saying, well, what he thinks, what he says, he doesn't matter anyway. And when that's your attitude toward that, he says, you better know something about it. It's time for you to stop passing judgment on one another, because to his own master he stands or falls, and he will stand. Why? Because there's somebody standing behind him holding him up. And when you're pushing on that weaker brother or that, quote, stronger brother, you're pushing on God. And I get this picture. I don't know why I have this picture that comes to my mind, but every time I read this passage, I see this tough guy that's pushing on this little guy. And he's just harassing him. He's just harassing him. He keeps pushing him, keeps harassing him. And then all of a sudden, in the shadows, right behind this guy that he didn't see, out steps this huge lion. And this lion opens his mouth and he roars. That's the word picture that I get. It's not, I'm not saying it's in this inherent in this passage, but whenever I get this picture in this whole context of somebody that just keeps harassing somebody else, they're not going to accept them. They're going to criticize them. They're going to go around behind them and talk about them. And they keep on harassing this person. And then all of a sudden, out from behind this person steps this huge lion, and he just lets out this incredible roar. And you see this bully guy, he just wilts down because he didn't know what was standing behind this weak brother. So when you push on that weak brother, you're pushing on God. And when you condemn or act like your brother is nobody, you might want to know who's standing behind him and propping him up. And by the way, if you have the right attitude and if you're doing what God tells you to, he's standing behind you too. And in this same context, Romans chapter 15, verse 3, the insults of those who insult you have fallen on me. Can someone insult your children without insulting you? They can't. I mean, we may try, but they can't, can they? If somebody really attacks your children, then you take that really personally, don't you? You know what he's saying God does? Whenever you discount somebody, or whenever you criticize another brother, when you make them out to be unimportant, guess who is right there? Guess who takes those insults upon himself? Is that reason for you to get along with your brother? Boy, there's even some more. But that's some incredibly powerful reasons, because God has accepted him. Because you are not the judge. And because God is the one who is making that brother stand. Whether he's on the weak side or whether he's on the strong side. It's God that makes that brother stand. And so, we've got, just like I started out this morning, we've got a really good thing going here at Woodland Oaks. I hope you appreciate the fact of the harmony and the unity that we have in this congregation. But that's no guarantee that Satan won't try to drive wedges. And he has tried to drive wedges. He's tried to undermine that unity and that security. And it comes in the form of people criticizing one another, or people acting like somebody is really unimportant. The devil's really, really powerful. And he can't stand for there to be a body of Christians that love one another and work together in harmony and unity. And so he has no choice. And whether or not he's successful depends on us developing the attitudes that God says necessary in order to maintain unity. And so, you know, there are some lessons that are easy to make an application, easy to respond to, and there are others that are not so easy. This one would be one that falls in the category of not so easy, because this is the real application of it. If you've got an attitude toward a brother or sister, then that's sinful. If you have a negative attitude that you have allowed to manifest itself in the way that you act, when you're with that brother or sister, or when you're not away from them. And that involves criticizing a brother or sister. If you've got something against that brother or sister, or there's a rift between you, then God says, you go to that person. Don't run around behind their back and talk about them. Don't run them down. Don't act like they're unimportant. Because every single person in this congregation, every single person in God's family is every bit as important as you are, or as I am. Every single one. And my attitude and my actions affect the unity of this church, this congregation. And so there may be some folks that your salvation is in jeopardy. We're going to see that tonight. That your salvation very well may be in jeopardy because of your attitude toward another brother or sister. There'll be people who will lose their soul over this matter. And it could be you. Don't let it be you. If you need to repent of an attitude in your life, or if there's some private matter that you need to address between yourself or a brother or sister, don't let today pass without doing it. And if you need the prayers of brothers and sisters, won't you come while we stand and sing?